is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Harri Mannonen from Pelikarhut, Kotka, Finland. I'm the author of ebook Complex Basketball Coaching, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly. Mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Coach, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave their success and your team's success to chance, or you may end up disappointed. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each year so they can discover how to think the game, lead your team, and run the show. They'll send them back to you a smarter player, a better leader, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in the locker room. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a camp near you. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel, tonight. We are celebrating a special anniversary here on the Hoopheads Pod.
Welcome back, Luke Walton.
4 years. Welcome back, Luke Walton, to Cleveland. But no,
yeah.
4 years of the Hoopheads podcast. We started with a NBA Finals preview back in 2018. It is now 2022.
Did we record that in my parents' house?
We may very well have. I think that may very well be where we recorded it, at your parents' kitchen table.
Yeah, I believe so. I think we recorded like a 4 or 5 that night, Mike. I feel like we just banged them out
because
my parents were out of town and we just went to it. I'm pretty sure.
We've come a long way. You're in your basement and I'm sitting in my office. We've come a long way since your parents' kitchen.
Yeah. I'm looking at
We each have our own microphone.
Yeah.
It's pretty fancy.
Yeah, and that 4 years ago I had 2 kids. Now I have doubled that, 4.
Congratulations.
You've got a kid that's about to go to college, and
I got one that just graduated on Sunday.
Yeah. And then you got a son it's crazy. It's been quite a 4 years. We put out, I don't know what episode number this is going to be, Mike. You got an episode
this
number
will
here
be
for us?
642. I think 642.
That's cranking out 642 in 4 years is pretty impressive.
That's a lot of episodes. I agree.
It's a lot of episodes. It's pretty impressive, and just keep cranking them out. We'll see.
And hey, we got a special deal for our listeners tonight.
Oh yeah, what's that?
So our sponsor, Fast Model, has a deal going during the NBA Finals.
And the way the NBA Finals has it scheduled, this deal is going to run for quite a long time, Mike. So
that's correct. It's going to drag it out when we play every three days. So you got a long time here to take advantage of this deal from Fast Model. But the deal is, you can get 22% off all software packages until the NBA Finals end. You only need to use the code CHAMPION2022. So you enter the code at checkout on fastmodelsports.com. Again, that's code CHAMPION2022. Get 22% off all software packages until the NBA Finals end. So that's a pretty good deal. And that's why we're here tonight, is to talk NBA Finals. So where do we want to start, Jay?
I think we start with the game that ended most recently, the Celtics and the Heat, Game 7. The Heat basically looked like they were the Walking Dead for the majority of the game. Then they decided in the third quarter to show up.
Butler decided to show up in the last three minutes.
Yeah, Butler and Bam had great games. Everyone else played like garbage. You know, I know we were texting at the end that Butler three, my initial reaction was it's a terrible shot, but I think in the grand scheme of things, he's got to shoot that, Mike, because he probably could have gotten to the basket and had a chance to score, but if they tie the game, I mean, Boston's still probably going to end up winning the game. At least, like, the Butler shot, you know, that gives them a chance and winning. And he was playing so well. And I know three-pointers aren't his game. But, like, in retrospect, I think that's not as terrible of a shot as my initial reaction. Because he had been playing so well. And, you know, he's kind of riding it and, you know, whatever. But, listen, Miami's was anemic on offense. I'm telling you right now, Mike, and we're going to get to this. I just don't see how Boston beats Golden State. I just don't see it. The Boston, they're beat up. I mean, Marcus Smart's clearly not 100%. Williams clearly not 100%. You know, Tatum had a decent game, but he still doesn't look like he's 100% with that shoulder situation. I just don't see how Golden State loses this series. And if they do, I'm going to be like, man, I wish we had LeBron back. Like this, because if we would have LeBron, God, just saying, like the cat, like, I'm not scared of this Boston. If you remember back to the beginning of the postseason, Mike, I was all in on the Cavs winning that first game and playing Boston because I thought the Cavs would at least match up with Boston. And I'm not scared of them. And here they are. They're the NBA Finals. I don't know. But the Heat just were terrible, other than Jimmy Butler. Listen, Jimmy Butler is fantastic in the last two games of the series. I don't know where he went, games 3, 4, and 5, but games 6 and 7, he was fantastic.
Did he go to Germany?
Very well could have.
Get some special treatment in between games 5 and 6. Jimmy was incredible in game 6. He was incredible in game 7. I think going back to talking about the shot, which clearly is and has been the topic of discussion on social media since that series ended. And you and I, as you said, we texted initially and both of us, I think, felt like, ooh, that was a terrible shot. And I still think that all things being equal, I would have rather had him attack Al Horford and try to get to the basket. But I do think that there's a case to be made for, in this series, even though he's not normally a good three-point shooter, in the couple games where he's played well, he was knocking down threes. So you have that going for you. Number two, you also have the point where Jimmy Butler played 48 minutes in that game, and I don't know if this entered his head or not as he's about to take this shot, but
I don't want to go to overtime.
I don't want to go overtime and have to play another 5 minutes. I don't know how much more gas I have left in the tank, so I wonder if that played a factor in, if I can make this shot, maybe we can get it done and win in regulation. And I think the other thing that maybe we discounted a little is Boston was just the way they collapsed. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Marcus Smart take like the last 5 or 6 shots
run? Every time he got the ball, I was like, keep shooting, Marcus. Keep shooting, Marcus.
That's been his whole career, right? Where he's just confident enough to try to do too much. Like, he's just good enough to think he can do all that, but he's just bad enough that he really can't do all that on the offensive end. And to be quite honest, that was stunning the way that they were able to get themselves back in the game, because going into that last 3 minutes and 30 seconds, I think they were down, what, 13, 11, something like that?
It was 15, because they went on a 13-0 run, and okay, they cut it to 2. So I'm pretty sure it was 15.
But there was literally no sign during the first, whatever, 44 minutes of that game that what we were about to see was actually going to happen. Now, like you said, Jimmy played really well. Bam had his second good game of the series. I think him being MIA in 5 out of the 7 games was a huge factor. They needed him to be much, much better than what he was. In those two games where he played well, he made such a difference in their performance. And they needed him to be better throughout the series. And he just wasn't, for whatever reason, he just wasn't up to the task. And when you watch that happen, it was almost like you couldn't believe that it was happening. And as someone who was a semi-neutral observer, I mean, I wanted the Heat to win, but I'm not living and dying with whether Miami beats Boston. But you're watching it going, wait, now they're down 7? Wait, now they're down 5? Wait, now Butler's got a shot in the air to take the lead? It almost seemed completely surreal because with 5 minutes to go, you were already writing Boston's ticket to the NBA Finals.
Well, you and I believe, I think it, I was texting with my dad because he was watching. Now, he does not watch much NBA now that the Cavs are out. My dad's rule is if the Cavs aren't playing and LeBron's not playing, he's not watching. He's just over. He doesn't watch the NBA much. And he was actually watching because he's like, there's nothing better to watch right now. So he was watching the game. And he's texting me. He's like, how is Miami even in this position? Like, when they were down 15, like, how are they in the Eastern Conference Final? This team looks terrible. He's like, this reminds me of the Cavs of last year. That's what he was comparing their offense to. Which, oh, when no, you think about it, like, I mean, well, think about it. It was awful. I mean, it was a lot of standing around dribbling, waiting for the shot clock to go off. And then there's like a minute and a half left, and he's like, oh my God, Boston's going to blow this. This is fantastic. Because he's like me and you, not a huge Celtics fan. Although he does not like Michael Jordan. On the anniversary of the shot, I showed him the picture. He's like, I've seen that too many times. I don't need to see it anymore. Stop showing me that. Anyways, but he was really convinced that the Celtics were going to blow it. And he was excited. And then they obviously didn't. They held it together. But, I mean, there's just no excuse. I just, like I said, and we'll talk about the series coming up. But I just don't know how, I mean, if the Celtics have funks like that, like, Golden State's going to score 100. Like, even if their defense, even the Celtics' defense is really good, Golden State's going to score because they're going to have too many offensive weapons. And there maybe their defense isn't as good as Miami's is. But I just don't see how they match up with Golden State, Mike. I just don't. And
let's say this. When you think about the difference between the Warriors' offense and the Miami Heat's offense,
it's a light years.
What the Heat put out there on the floor offensively, other than Jimmy Butler in Game 6 and 7, it was a struggle. It was a struggle for them to create good looks, and they just didn't have enough creation with Lowry being injured and playoff Lowry rearing his ugly head and all the flopping that he did. His flopping was ridiculous, by the way. Guys were nowhere near him and he's falling down and that was ridiculous. But nonetheless, Miami just didn't have enough shot creation without Hero. Butler he didn't miss those 3 games, but basically was MIA during games 3, 4, and 5 where he scored 27 points in 3 games. And like I said earlier, they needed more from Bam. They needed Bam to be, at worst, the 3rd best player in the series. And I would say he was probably nowhere near that just because he just didn't give him enough consistently. It felt like there was a lot of times, like I watched him, he's bringing the ball up the floor and looked like he was going downhill and had an opportunity to attack Horford. And then he would just dribble down, dribble to the middle of the key and then turn around and dribble it right back out instead of attacking or pulling up and shooting a little 12-footer. It just felt like with as clogged up as their offense was, that him being able to create something would have made a huge difference. And I think when you look at Boston's defense, it's been really good throughout this entire playoffs. What they did to Durant in round 1, and I know they didn't by any means contain or stop Giannis, who had a historic 7-game series, but he's the best player in the league, and they definitely made him work, and they also forced other players from Milwaukee to be able to do things. And then this Miami series, sure, they didn't stop Jimmy Butler, but the reality is that Miami didn't really have much else. And I look at, I don't know, we've said it a bunch of times, but I think that whoever wins this championship, we talked about it last week. I mean,
there's a question I asked. It's one of the worst.
It's definitely got to be one of the worst champions of the last 25 years. And we went through it and talked about it. But I still think that after watching the way these two series concluded, I just don't think there's any doubt that these two teams aren't to the level of some of our most recent past champions. The Warriors, look, they've had a great year, but this Warriors team is nowhere near any of the five Warriors teams that made the NBA Finals. It's just not even close. Now, maybe you could say it's close to the team that the Warriors had when Durant and Klay went down against the Raptors, but there's no way. This team isn't as good as the 2015 or 2016 team without Durant, and then clearly the championship teams with Durant, there's no comparison to this team. So I don't know what to expect from Boston in this series. I think they're going to play good defense, but Miami's offense compared to Golden State's offense, what you were trying to defend when you were defending the Heat versus what you're going to have to defend when you're defending the Warriors is a huge difference. Now, I will say, I think the Warriors' path to the NBA Finals has been pretty smooth as well.
Well, I mean, and they've also had all this rest now. I mean, do you see the report that it sounds like Gary Payton's going to be good to go? Did you see that today?
That helps. I did not see that, but that helps him for sure.
Oh, for sure. He's on track to play game one, is the report. So, I mean, I know he's not like a huge cog in the machine, but when you think about it, you know, he's at least a someone they can plug and play. His defense is pretty good, and anything he gives on the offensive end is a bonus. And like when you talk about the grand scheme of things with Golden State, like they definitely Steph is obviously not known for his defensive prowess, and Klay is not what he used to be, but he's still good. I just think that gives him a little bit extra, and obviously Draymond's Draymond. I mean, Draymond's gonna put it all out there on the defensive end. So,
and Wiggins continues to be better than any of us expected.
I mean, Wiggins, where has this guy been? Like listen, I understand that Steph got the Western Conference award, right? Like he got the award.
Yes,
I would have given it to Wiggins.
The Magic Johnson award.
I would have given it to Wiggins honestly because Curry was what we thought Curry was going to be. The reason Golden State easily won that series in the last two games was because of Wiggins. I mean, Wiggins just was fantastic, and I never thought
that
I never,
goes to what that goes to what we've been complaining about, where your stars are your stars, right? Like you're saying, basically, well, Curry was Curry. The difference was that Wiggins played well because Curry did what we expected him to do, and Wiggins is the guy who came through. And conversely, you look at, if we're going to talk a little bit about that Dallas Golden State series, Luka was Luka. Now he didn't shoot the ball well in game five. I think he was 10 for 26 or something, but he still ended up over 30. And I think he averaged 32 or 33 a game in that series. And when his role players shot above 40% from three, they were right there in the game and they won one. And then the games where they didn't shoot it well, they lost. And that's where I think the NBA has to figure out whether or not that's a problem, whether that's a problem that just has surfaced its head this year, or whether it's something that's going to continue to be a problem moving forward. Because to me, when these games come down to whether or not role players are going to make threes or not, I'm not sure I like that. I'd much rather have, it just always feels like we're only working for either our stars to get what used to be considered good shots in the game, where they're going to the basket, they're taking it hard to the hole, they're getting good looks from mid-range, and everybody else is just standing outside the three-point line. And those are the shots that we're trying to generate. We're either trying to generate a traditional good shot for a star or a three for a role player. And no matter what you say, league average, I think for threes this year was 36% maybe?
Yeah.
I just feel like it's not, I don't enjoy watching games where what determines who wins is whether or not Reggie Bullock or Dorian Finney-Smith or Grant Williams are going to make threes. That to me shouldn't be what games at this level of the NBA are being decided upon. I'd much rather it being decided upon by the best stars, players trying to generate. Yeah, just trying to generate good shots. And it feels like we're getting somewhat away from that. And maybe I'm wrong because maybe, again, the stars, solar stars, are guys opening, are still putting
the stars
up.
Are
they're
open,
still putting up.
The stars are opening up the lanes for those other players, Mike.
Right, I agree. Right? And the defenses are more sophisticated, right? So they're trying to take away everything else. They're trying to take away those passing lanes. They're trying to make those shots, those threes, as difficult as possible. But there's something about it that just doesn't sit right with me when a team, if they make 20 out of 45 threes, you're going to win. And if you miss 13, you know, if you miss whatever, 35 of those 45 threes, you're clearly going to lose. And to me, that's just, I don't know. I don't like the way the games play out when that's how it's determined. I'd like to see more variance in the type of shots that role players are taking, whereas it seems like now, basically, if you're a role player, your only job is to play defense and shoot threes, and that's it. And if you can do that, then there's a spot for you. I'd like to see just a wider variance in what role players are and what they can do.
Yeah, I understand your point, Mike. And once again, this goes back to what we talked about last week. I really think Golden State kind of opened this door, right? Like, Golden State was the first team to play like this. Way back in, I mean, do we want to count 2014? I mean, this kind of Mark Jackson was kind of playing them like this. He wasn't coaching them as well as Kerr is, but I mean, they're the ones that started this, and now everyone's kind of, you know, it's a cop. The NBA is a copycat league, right? Agree?
Agreed.
Mike? I mean, like,
yes.
As things evolve, as one team successful, other teams start to do the same exact thing. So, you know, Golden State was the first team to do it like this. Now there's all these other teams that are doing it. I mean, basically, when you think about it, what teams the NBA are not following the Golden State blueprint right now? Can we parse?
There's pieces to it, right? So I think what you're describing from Golden State is that you have your stars, and then you have your role players are playing primarily off of the gravity of the stars. But
yes,
what's different, and I think what makes Golden State unique, and this is something that goes back to when the Cavs were playing them year after year, and I know the Cavs talked about this, that because of the way Golden State plays, where they're not just one guy with the ball. So they're not playing like Luka and the Mavericks. They're not playing like LeBron and the Cavs.
It's the ball movement.
Right. It's the ball movement. It's the player movement off ball. It's the screening. It's the cutting. It's the dribble handoffs. It's all these things that Golden State does where it's not just the ball in Steph's hands and he's dribble, 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 pick and roll, try to attack that way, which is how, honestly, that's how most teams that we've watched in the playoffs, that's how most teams are playing. Some version of that, obviously to varying degrees, depending upon what your superstar does or what your superstar is.
Yep.
Golden State doesn't play that way. I get your point about how they're playing off role players. And they were probably the first team where your stars, things went completely around how Curry and Thompson and Draymond, and then obviously once you have Durant, you just have so much shooting that it was impossible to guard those guys.
You forgot Festus Ezeli.
Festus Ezeli. So now you're in a position, though, with Golden State where they don't have that same level of shot-making and shot creation. Obviously, you replace Durant with Jordan Poole or Wiggins. It's not the same level of player by any means, but Golden State still has that movement, which is different from how teams have to defend. So when you look at this series going forward here with the Celtics, how long does it take the Celtics to adjust from going against this Miami offense, which was stuck in the mud basically the entire series, versus, you know, Golden State is not going to be stuck in the mud. Now, they may not make threes and they may have some other issues with turnovers and different things, but they're not going to run their offense the same way Miami did. So how does Boston adjust to that? What are the matchups? How does that work? I think one thing, I don't know if you saw this statistic, but since Steve Kerr took over the Warriors, what I believe eight years ago.
The Celtics is the only team that has a winning record. Is that what you're going to tell me?
Celtics are 9-7 against the Warriors in the time that Kerr's coached them. So I look at it and I say, why is that? What could it be about Boston that would enable them to be that successful against Golden State? And I think what it comes down to is their ability to switch across multiple positions compared to most teams. Even you think about the James Harden, Chris Paul Rockets that twice matched up with Golden State, and maybe without the Chris Paul injury in 2018, that maybe they would have been able to beat the Warriors had Chris Paul not gotten injured, but they played a switch-heavy style of defense. And I think Boston, when you think about Brown, Tatum, Smart, Horford, those guys are all switchable players. Grant Williams, switchable, can play guys who are bigger, smaller. Obviously, there's various... the ability level is slightly different between all those guys, but you can leave them on an island and you're not going to be like, oh man, we have to get off of that switch. And I think that's what makes them unique. And yet at the same time, I think because of the way Golden State plays, where they're not just hunting that one guy, their free-flowing offense, I think maybe to some degree negates the fact that Boston can switch across multiple positions. Now, maybe you can say, hey, they can switch those off-ball screens, they can switch those splits, they can switch dribble handoffs, they can do all that stuff, and maybe that takes away some of what Golden State can do. But I think Boston's in for a different kind of defensive challenge, and it'll be interesting to see how, especially game one, shapes up as they're trying to shed what they did against Miami and realize, hey, this is a completely different animal. Because I know the Cavs always talked about that it took like a game or even a game and a half before they could kind of catch up with the speed and just the way that the Warriors played, which was completely different from how other teams in the league were playing.
Well, not only that, Mike, I mean, it's not without noting that, like, Golden State gets been sitting in wait. And by the way, the first game is in Golden State, so they didn't have to travel. So they've been sitting, sipping Mai Tais or whatever they're doing, you know, just hanging out. Like, I'm not saying, like, you know, Kerr said, I don't ever do this, but I gave them 2 days off because might as well. Like, they had like 10 days between games, right? Now, and some people talk about how that's a detriment, but when you're like the Warriors, and I mean, let's be honest, some of their role players are a little long in the tooth or have been injured lately, the last few years. So giving them those 10 days off is going to be crucial for them. And they've been sitting around, whereas Boston went through. I understand that Brooklyn series was short. That was a physical series. We got the Milwaukee series, a physical series. Then this Miami series, 7 games, very physical series. Arguably the most physical of the three, okay? And here are the Golden State Warriors who got to play a jawless Memphis. They avoided Phoenix. They just had to deal with Luka, really, in the Dallas series. I mean, they've had a much easier road. It's kind of, I almost want to, it's kind of almost like the Cavs when they were 2015 to 2018 going through the Eastern Conference, how they had, and everything seemed to line up for them. You know what I mean? Like, Golden State had a much easier road. So they're going to play. I think Golden State wins game one. I mean, I don't want to know if we want to jump to predictions here, but I just think that they've had all this time. They're going to come up with a game plan. They're going to be well rested, and they've been here before. Like, the three of the big players in this series have been here before. Kerr has been here before. I mean, Adoka's never coached. I mean, he's never coached, obviously. I don't know that he's ever been on a staff that's been in the finals, right? I mean, he was on the Boston staff. I don't know where he was before then. So I just don't see. I think there's a lot going in. Now, do I think this is going to be a sweep? No, I think this is going to be a solid series. But I just think that Golden State's going to come out, and they're going to know how to play. It's in Golden State. They're going to let Marcus Smart shoot the ball. Marcus Smart, he loves to shoot. He's the new Jordan Clarkson. Let him shoot. That's the game plan. I guarantee you. I mean, you saw Miami do it. I'm going to tell you right now, they're going to have Steph Curry guarding him. And Steph Curry is just going to be like, okay, shoot it. Go ahead, buddy. And if you lose because Marcus Smart hits three, then you live with it.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. Let me address a couple things you said. One, I think the rest is big. Boston has played two physical seven-game series in a row where they had played, I think, 14 games in 28 days, playing every other day. So they're already beat up. You talked about Smart's ankle. You talked a little bit about Tatum's shoulder. Robert Williams, who knows? It seems like even moment to moment within the game, you watch him run down the floor and you're like, oh man, he's limping and he's hurt. And Boston,
you don't even know if he's going to play from one game to the next. I mean,
right, that's what I'm saying. And you're further and further away. It seems like Pritchard has played less and less as the playoffs gone on. So basically you're looking at, with Boston, you're looking at a seven-man rotation with Pritchard maybe being an 8 to 10 minute guy at the very, very most. And
of those guys, like three of them are hurt.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So three of your top seven have at the very least nagging injuries that are real, that have caused them to miss games over the course of the playoffs. So I think that rest that Golden State has is a big advantage. Now you could say, hey, Boston just picked up a few more days rest than what they've had previously, but they also have to fly to San Francisco. And I would be stunned if Golden State doesn't win game one. I think just based on the fact that Boston's coming off that grueling 28 days of 14 games and they're still banged up. And with what I talked about earlier, just them adjusting to the different style of play that Golden State has. So I think that's number one. I think Golden State grabs game one, which obviously if you grab game one, you only got to win three out of the final six in order to be the NBA champion. And then I think the other thing that you touched on when you started talking about how the Warriors are going to score and how the Warriors are going to defend Marcus Smart, I think to me it really comes down to, I think Golden State's going to be able to match up just the way that Boston can match up with Golden State. I think Golden State can do the same, maybe not quite as well as Boston has, because when you look at the Warriors, if they have Jordan Poole in the game, and obviously Klay's not quite what he was defensively before his injuries. So I think that Golden State has a couple more weak spots that the Celtics can attack, but I've maintained this throughout the playoffs. And although Tatum has had moments where he's been fantastic, he's also had moments where I feel like he hasn't proven to be on the level
moment's
of
been too big. Moments too big.
At times. Now it hasn't been. Look, he had 46 in probably the biggest game of their season in game six at Milwaukee when their entire season was on the line, and he couldn't have come through in a bigger way than he did in that game. But I look at him more as a guy who, he's going to have on a bad night, he's still going to get his shots, he's still going to do things. I think he's more consistent than he's ever been in the past. I still don't trust him completely to put his team on his back for seven games, where every game I know that this guy's going to average 32, 33 points a game in the series. I don't see him at that level yet. And if he's not at that level, it opens the door for the one thing that Steph Curry's missing on his resume, which is a finals MVP. And I think that Steph has an opportunity to really stamp this season, this playoffs, if he can come through and have a huge series. And he hasn't really had in the finals a huge above average Steph Curry series. And what I mean by that is he's been really, really good in lots of finals where He's averaged 26, 27 a game, but he hasn't had that outlier where all of a sudden he's in the 30s every game and he's hitting seven or eight threes every single game. And he's consistently the best player on the floor. He hasn't been that in an NBA Finals. And I think that this is an opportunity. I don't know if he will or he won't, but this is certainly an opportunity for him to burnish his legacy as one of the all-time greats. If Golden State gets this championship after being away from the game for 2 years with Curry hurt his hand and they were, whatever, 15 and 67 that year, and then he comes back last year and it's just him and they go on that little run at the end, but then they get knocked out by Memphis in the play-in. For them to be away from it for 2 years and to come back with their three main guys, if they somehow win this and Steph has a finals MVP type series and wins that, I think it just takes him to a whole nother level. I know there's been some discussion of where does he rank on all-time point on the all-time point guard list. First of all, it's hard to almost think of him as a point guard. I don't know if you have that same
dilemma. I agree.
I don't think of him as a point guard, to be honest.
No, because he shoots too much to be classified as a point guard, right?
Yeah, and he's not always the guy bringing the ball up the floor. And when you think of point guards, I think you think of somebody who has the ball in their hands and controls the action. Steph is just a completely different type of player than anybody we've ever seen historically, because the way he moves without the ball and the attraction that he gets from the defense, no matter what he's doing, all that attention that he commands opens up so many things for the Warriors. And yet it's so unlike almost any player that we ever had in the history of the game, just because shooting is so important and his range is so unlimited that teams panic no matter where he is on the floor if he's breaking open, and that opens up things for his teammates. So I don't consider him to be a traditional point guard, and so it's hard for me to get into this discussion of where does he rank in the all-time point guards, because when I watch him play, in my mind, I don't see a point guard. I see a shooting guard, and I think this is a big series for his legacy. Look, he's already going to be rank him wherever you want in the history of the game. He's the greatest shooter ever. I don't think that's even disputable at this point. And if he gets another championship here and he caps that off with a finals MVP, I think you start looking at him. He starts creeping towards the top 15 players of all time.
Do you have him in the top 25 right now, Mike?
I think he's got to be, just based on the fact that, and I'd have to go through the whole list and figure it out, but you look at his shooting, you look at what he's done consistently throughout his career, you look at the winning, you look at his impact on the game and the way the game has changed as a result of, not completely of him, because the game was headed in this direction anyway. Even if there was no Steph Curry, the game was going to get to where it is today, yep, with or without him. But
he expedited the process, right?
Yeah, he was certainly the catalyst. He was the guy who pushed it in that direction. And so I think, yeah, he's got to be in the top 25 at this point. And if he adds one more and he adds a finals MVP to two MVPs in the regular season, one of them unanimous, goes with all the shooting and just what he's done over the course of his career, I think he's starting to sniff around the top 15 if that happens.
Okay, I agree. I'm almost ready to put him there now, quite frankly. And I was very bullish on him when he came out of college because of all his ankle issues that he had. And I'm glad. Listen, as much as I would have enjoyed the Cavs, like, winning more than one championship, I really think, like, the game's obviously changed, and this is probably a discussion that we have to have, like, in the off season about, like, where the game is now and where we think it's going to go and, like, what do we think they can do to fix any, you know, problems. Like, the game has definitely changed because of Steph Curry. Once again, we can argue the merits of whether that's for the better or for the worse, but he's definitely changed. And as far as lasting impacts that someone's had on, you know, the game, I think this is definitely going to be up there. I mean, LeBron, obviously, if his generation was the guy who made the impact. Jordan of his generation was the guy that made the biggest impact. You could make an argument about Kobe in between the two, okay? But Steph is this generation's, although he's kind of like a hybrid because he's almost in LeBron's generation, but a little younger than LeBron's generation, right? You agree with that? Like, he's kind of like, LeBron was a defining person, but, I mean, Steph's only a few years younger than LeBron at this point, right? I mean, he's...
Yeah, I think, what's LeBron, 38 maybe? LeBron 38 now?
I think
Curry's 34. I think Curry's 34. I believe.
So he's kind of like a half step, you know? I mean, he's, I'm be clear, he's not LeBron. He's not going to be a top five player all time, but I definitely think you can make the argument top 15 is definitely, if not already there, definitely attainable.
And a guy who changed the game, made the game different. You think about Wilt and how they have to widen the lane. You think about Kareem and they outlaw the dunk. You think about just the history of the game and how things, how Bird and Magic changed and made passing cool. Whereas prior to those two guys, it was kind of a one-on-one league. That's the reputation that the league had in the late 70s was just a one-on-one renegade league. And then Bird and Magic come in and change that. And then obviously Jordan with his singular talent, just ability to fly through the air and do all the things that he did and just market himself and how he changed not only the on-court product, but also how athletes market themselves off the floor. And I think you put Steph in that category, regardless of where he fits in as a top 15 or top 25 player, there can be no argument that the way that he played the game was different from how anybody played it before him. And as a result of that, the game has changed. Now, like I said earlier, I think the game would have gotten there anyway because of analytics and people understanding the value of a three-point shot versus a two-point shot. But Steph became the model for what a modern NBA player looked like and how you could build an offense around a guy that could shoot from distance. And clearly, there's other guys that can do things similar to what he does, but nobody does it at the level that he's been able to do it for the duration of his career. He's just been incredible. And as we've said many times in this podcast, despite our misgivings about the Warriors, and I'm going to have a really hard time in this series because of my dislike for the Celtics and my animosity that I've built up towards the Warriors over the course of the four finals that they played against the Cavs. Prior to the Warriors becoming the Warriors, Curry was a guy that I loved to watch because he's constantly on the move. And if you were going to teach a player how to play the game, I don't think there'd be anybody that you'd rather have a young player watch in terms of one of the, I think, lost arts of the game is how to move without the ball. Because so often now, especially at the NBA level, moving without the ball means I just stand somewhere and wait for somebody to kick it out to me for a three. And I think that's where Golden State's style is unique, is they just keep moving and Curry's constantly using screens, setting screens, back cutting, has great footwork when he shoots the ball. He's always on balance. And those are all things that if you're trying to teach a young player how to play the game, or you're trying to show a high school or college player, hey, this is what you need to do in order to be able to be a guy who's great without the ball, there's nobody better to watch than Steph. And he's really hard to guard. And the Warriors kind of follow his lead. And as we've talked about, I think for Boston, it's going to be an adjustment. Now, do I think they can make that adjustment? Yes. But I'm not sure they're going to make it right out of the gate in game one. And then it's going to come down to Steph's going to have an opportunity to cement his legacy or to add another layer to his legacy. And if Golden State wins it and he gets another finals MVP or gets his first finals MVP, wow, it's going to really add to who he is and what he's been throughout the course of his career.
All right. Are we ready to make a prediction, Mike? You want to make a prediction?
Let's do it.
I think I'm going to go Warriors in six.
Got him winning it in Boston.
In Boston.
I'm going to give Boston a little bit more credit, and I'm going to say Warriors in seven. I don't feel great about it because I think you mentioned it earlier that Golden State's path to the finals, Denver with no Jokic, Memphis loses Ja midway through the series, and then they come through. and they play Dallas and Dallas doesn't shoot it well, I'm not sure how good that run of opponents really is. But all that being said, I do think Golden State is the better team. When it comes down to it, if I have to trust Clay, Curry, and Draymond, or Tatum, Brown, and Smart, I think I'm riding with Draymond, Steph, and Clay. So I'm going to go Warriors in seven.
All right. Sounds good. All right. We didn't start the episode with Trivia Mike. We're not going to end the episode with dad jokes. However, we are going to discuss Luke Walton really quickly, Mike. Do you like the pickup of Luke Walton? Do you dislike the pickup of Luke Walton? Is he clearly the weakest part of the bench? as far as coaching, you don't think it's going to hurt us, but it's not going to super help us, or what do you think, Mike?
Since he's Luke Walton, I'm lukewarm on the Luke Walton pickup. I don't think it's a bad pickup. He's a guy who has had head coaching experience. He's a guy who was here in Cleveland as a player. I certainly don't think it hurts the Cavs. I'm not sure how much it helps when you talk about what does Luke Walton bring to the table as an assistant. I'd have to know more about what his role is going to be and whatever the case might be with him on the staff. So it's an interesting pickup because obviously it's a big name to have as an assistant on your staff. Luke Walton's well known, not just in NBA circles, but he's known outside of that. And he's somebody that probably the average fan at least recognizes the name. So from that standpoint, I guess it's interesting, but I don't know what it really means in terms of what the Cavs are or are not going to do. The Cavs got more things to figure out. Number one being Colin Sexton. What do we do with signing him to an extension or not signing him to an extension? I think that's where the whole offseason starts. And then I know we're going to get into some draft talk here, not tonight, but at some time in the next couple episodes with the draft coming up relatively soon. But to me, the number one priority for the Cavs is to figure out, what are you doing with Sexton? Are you going to extend him? And if you are going to extend him, what's the price? And we've talked about it during the season where now you're probably going to have a chance, hopefully, to be able to look at Sexton, be able to look at Caris LeVert, figure out if one or both of those guys is part of your long-term future. And hopefully at pick 14, there's always guys in that range. Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, Giannis. Man, if you could get somebody anywhere close to the level of those guys at pick number 14, be great to see. I'd love to see him add somebody on the wing who could score. The kid from Ohio State, Malachi Branham. I'd like to see him be a guy that's in the mix for the Cavs just because he's a guy who offensively can score. And even if you had a guy who...
I don't think he's available at 14, Mike.
He may not be. He may not be. But I've seen him in a couple mock drafts be available. I've seen him be available at that level. So we'll see.
Yeah. Did you see the other thing really quickly? Did you see the other thing that if Houston doesn't sign James Harden, they're interested in Kyrie Irving? Or not Houston. Philadelphia doesn't re-sign James Harden, they're interested in Kyrie Irving. Like, oh, so this guy didn't work out for us, so let's bring in the other one.
let's hope that is not true for Daryl Morey's sake. Let's just hope that is not the case. I don't know. Look, would you want either one of those guys anywhere near your roster? I think the answer to that question is clearly no.
Oh yeah. Really quickly.
At least not the price that they would command. Right. If you want to sign up for the mid-level exception, great. Let's have at it.
Yeah, really, one more thing, Mike. Just, I know it's technically now June 1st, but you know what today's the anniversary of? LeBron's greatest playoff game of all time.
The J.R. Smith timeout and the missed...
No. LeBron's greatest game in my opinion, the
48 special.
48 points, 25 straight points, 29 of the Cavs last 30 during his last 16 minutes. Span of 16 minutes. I mean, game winner in second overtime, game high 9 rebounds, game high 7 assists. Is that his greatest game, like individual performance game? Does that go? I mean, I know he's won three finals.
I think there's three. To me, there's three games. There's three games that stand out to me. So
that one?
That's one of them. There was game six in Miami, or in Boston, the second year of the Heat. So not the year they lost to Dallas, but the year they were trying to get back and win their first championship. And they were down 3-2. And LeBron had, I think he had 46 in that game, if I'm not mistaken. And then the last one is that game one of the 2018 finals, where that might have actually been the best he's ever played, considering how good that Golden State team was. So when I think of the best games LeBron has ever played, those are the three that jump out at me.
Okay.
The 48 special was incredible in the moment, because we knew that he was something special, but that was a game that I remember exactly where I was when I watched it, and it just felt like, holy cow, what this guy is doing is just incredible. And he was doing it with a team that those original Cavs teams were.
I mean, I probably could have walked
ill-equipped
on that team, Mike.
Yeah, you might have been able
to. I'm joking.
You might have been able to.
Sasha Pavlovich.
Those teams were rough, let's put it that way. And what LeBron did that night was incredible.
Yeah. And just to be clear, like, I remember, like, of all games, there's two games I remember where I was when they happened in the first iteration of LeBron. That is one of them. Can you guess what the other game that I remember where I was at?
The buzzer beater against Orlando in game two?
I unfortunately didn't see that live. I was in Lesotho, Africa doing a service trip when that happened. My parents were at the game. No.
Okay.
The Damon Jones buzzer beater against the Washington Wizards.
Nice. There were some good games against the Wizards.
That was my favorite rival of the Cavs back in the original LeBron era.
Antoine Jameson, Gilbert Arenas, Caron Butler. Yeah, those were fun.
Javaris Crittenden.
Yeah, those were some legitimate. There was some legitimate ill will between those two teams, without question.
That was like all time level. Like, they hated each other, and it was enjoyable.
Those were fun, especially because that was our first foray into playoff basketball with LeBron. Were those Wizards series?
That's my first foray of remembering like the Cavs being a good basketball team. Like, I remember glimpses of the Cavs with Mark Price and Doherty and Nance, but I was like 6 and 7 at that point. Like, I really remember, and obviously I remember us being terrible for a few years. I remember 97 very well. Like, that team could have been really good. What was it, four rookies that we had on our team? Was that 97?
Sounds Mike? Right. That was the Derek Anderson, Mills, Brevin Knight. Yep.
Yeah,
Z, Big Z.
Yeah. That team was exciting. Tyrone Hill. I always liked Tyrone Hill. I wonder what Tyrone Hill is doing now.
That's a good question. Tyrone Hill was tough, man, out of Xavier. That guy played hard and competed.
Yeah.
He was physical. Good player.
Yeah. All right. So, sorry, we're going down memory lane here with nostalgia, but I just wanted to bring up that the 48-point special was there, so I wanted to...
The anniversary of the 48 special and the Hoop Heads pod.
So
special anniversary that we share with LeBron.
All right, good stuff. But before we wrap up, I guess our plan, and this is our intentions, have been that we've always done podcasts after finals games. Now, there might be some real late requirements for doing these, but we think that Thursday night we will definitely record. I think we'll be able to pull it off. That's our thought, right, Mike? Our thought is, yes. Thursday night will game one, overreactions or whatever. And then we're going to kind of play it by ear as far as when we do it. The nice thing about the way that the NBA is dragging this out, like, if we don't do episode right after game two, which is Sunday, because, you know, we needed 3 days between games after the first one, we'll be able to record like after game two on Tuesday next week. So... And we can kind of keep on our normal schedule. So I think maybe the most prudent laid plans, Mike, would be for us to try to do an episode game one after game one, and then we do our normal Tuesday episode next week, to them we are at least like keeping it somewhat regular, and then we'll kind of play it by ear after that. Does that sound like it's a tenable situation?
Yeah, I think we're going to try our best to have a post game show after every game to the best of our ability. And that'll be, I think in the past we've done 15 or 20 minutes on each game. And so that's our goal, our intention. And if it works out where we end up doing it in the immediate aftermath, great. If it ends up like you just described, where we do it Tuesday, because it'll still be enough time in between, we'll still be getting it in between games two and three, regardless of whether we do it 5 minutes after game two ends or whether we do it on Tuesday night in leading up to Wednesday's game three back in Boston. That's what we're going to try to do. And so please make sure you check those out and watch your feed, because we're going to try to get those out to you again.
We're
after
closer to 700 with all these episodes.
We're gonna crank our way towards 700.
Are you gonna count them? Are you gonna count them? Because I know in years past they've kind of just been like half episodes, Mike. That's the real question.
I'm gonna have to look back. I think we counted them, but I could be wrong. Maybe we counted them as bonuses. I think if we do count them as bonuses, the reason would be when we're putting episodes into the queue and we're numbering them and getting everything ready from that standpoint. But we should be able to predict when these are going to come about. So, and we've got a few episodes now sort of backlogged. So I should be able to make it work. Now my challenge is trying to find time when I'm not at school and I'm here at home doing things and trying to find the time to put episodes together. So that's neither here nor there. It's been
and basketball. You got to work around basketball camp too, Mike. That's
basketball camp starts next week. So I'm excited about that. And
so there you go. Yeah.
I'm still looking for a couple more employees. If anybody's interested in coaching, if you're here in Cleveland, you're interested in coaching at one of our camps, let me know. Shoot me an email, headstartbasketball@usa.net. I'm looking for a couple more coaches. So, all right, that's my spiel for tonight. And we already talked about Fast Model, 22% off. Use code CHAMPION2022 to get 22% off all your Fast Model software. We have a couple of good episodes this week. Yesterday we put up, well, I guess now it'll be 2 days ago, but on Monday we put up an episode with Joe Crispin, head men's basketball coach at Rowan University. And Joe and I spent a lot of time in that episode. And Jason, we talked about we spent a lot of time, honestly, on youth basketball, not a lot of time on Rowan University basketball. So we're going to have Joe back on to talk about his team. But we did talk a lot of youth basketball in that episode, so it's a good one. And then coming up on Friday.
And I jumped
Friday,
right in on that one too, right, Mike?
You were right in. I think nine seconds in, I think you were on it. So, and then Friday we have coming up Danny Gallagher from Magnificat High School girls head varsity coach. And Danny's episode actually got recorded like a year ago, maybe even 2 years ago. Oh, and somehow got lost. Danny's episode got lost, but it is still just as relevant today as it was when we recorded it.
So
we're
going to put that episode out. He found it.
Yeah, we're coming out of the archives, and we profusely apologized to Danny. We still have no idea what happened. I have no idea why it didn't go out when it was supposed to, but it didn't. So we're going to release that episode on Friday. So make sure you check those out. Make sure you check out the upcoming NBA Finals episodes, and we will leave it there. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.